One of the initiatives that the board is supporting, starting with the planning task force, it's part of the new strategic plan that the board has adopted, and you'll receive a copy of that at some point during the Congress. So we see it as a very natural continuation of the work that the planning task force did on urban codes and zoning, and we think it'll also relate more and more, as we've talked about it, to the regional initiative that Peter Kalthorp will talk about at the plenary today. So it's a very good intersection of a lot of the important issues that the Congress and you as practitioners are involved in. We have three excellent speakers today. We have two from the West Coast from California and one from my home state in Florida. We're going to start hearing from Matt and Steve on two comprehensive plan initiatives they're working on in cities in California. And then Marcella will end with a discussion more broader level at the county level, the county of St. Lucie. Those of you who were at the plenary yesterday evening saw them receive a award for the coding part of what they've been doing there. So, Matt Ramey is also going to do a little overview for us of the work that the Planning Task Force and Initiative Group is doing as we enter into a concentrated effort of looking at comp plans and new urbanism. He'll then talk about the city of Southgate and the work he's doing as a professional in that area. And Steve Hammond from Walsh, Roberts and Todd will talk about his work in a larger city of Sacramento. And then again, Marcella will finish with her work in St. Lucie County. So, without further delay, Matt, would you proceed to give us a short overview and talk about your work in Southgate?
Good morning, everybody. Can you hear me? Yes? Are you all awake? No? Yeah, neither am I. Should we take a five-minute nap and then we can start off? It's great to be here talking about this topic. It's something that I've thought a lot about. Wow, that was interesting. That's no problem. It's something that I've thought a lot about and been working on for several years now. It's sort of interesting to me to actually be working and doing comprehensive plans because when I was in grad school, I said to myself, I am never working on a comprehensive plan. They're useless. The communities don't use them. It's just not worth my time. And what I've sort of realized is that the comprehensive plans, the tool in many ways is used wrong. And that the way that we have it designed is actually not appropriate to get to the things that we want to get to, that we as new urbanists believe we want to get to. And so in the last few years, there's been a real rethinking in the profession about what the comprehensive plan is and how it can be used in communities. And let me just kind of give a quick overview. We all know the common perceptions about new urbanism, front porches, alleys, nostalgic architecture. It's project-based. And then, of course, there's the Truman Show, which is how most of the people know what new urbanism is. The charter for the new urbanism focuses really at three scales. There's 27 principles for the three scales. You all probably know this. The region, metropolis, city and town, neighborhood, district and corridor, and then street, block and building. And each one, this is one of the themes, that this kind of, this scaling is really important to the new urbanism. And you know, I think for a long time there's been a lot of focus on, you know, starting with the street, block and building and then moving to the district and corridor, and not as much focus on the region, the region and the city. And that's really where I think there's more of a focus coming now within the Congress. Some of the common themes that the presenters are gonna talk about today. One is that the regulatory framework in which the plan and in which the planning happens has an impact on what the plan looks like. So in California, where Steve and I are from, there's some pretty strict requirements, and those requirements have an impact on what the form of the plan is. That happens to a certain extent because there's always flexibility. But the reality is, I think that there's more flexibility in many places than people think that there is. And I think that's one of the lessons. And the example in California, we have seven required elements, we can't even call them chapters, seven required chapters in a plan. And most of the plans that I've seen actually follow, they just say, okay, here's land use, here's circulation, without any thinking for how all of these things interrelate. The plans that you're going to hear and that I think are really New Urban in focus transcend scale. So they move beyond just the city scale and then look up to the region and then down to the blocks. The plans move beyond just simple land use, beyond the two dimensions of land use. There's an identification of the component parts of the city. Cities are not monolithic places. They have different components to them. The public process that goes along with this, while not necessarily kind of new urban and it's just good planning, is really designed to show people what the results are going to look like and then to maintain the thread of the process through to the writing of the plan and then the implementation of that plan. And then finally, implementation is actually embedded into the plan itself. Plan is a verb, it's not a noun, and so it's really a process of getting to implementation. So starting with scales, this is a little bit hard to see, but the upper left-hand corner is what we typically think of and we typically see when we look at a comprehensive plan. We have the city, and we have maybe a couple parcels or a couple streets on the outside of it, and then nothing. And there's really kind of not a sense of where the community is located in space. And if you look at this one, this is the city of Chino, which is in the Inland Empire east of Los Angeles. It's actually right at the confluence of four counties. And its regional location is extremely important. And so that location within the region needs to be taken into account. Another concept is that land use does not equal form and character. In traditional comprehensive planning, we have a series of colors. And the colors represent land uses, and the land uses are flat. The problem is that, again, that the land use, the color on the map, doesn't really give any indication of what the built environment is going to be like. And it's in the built environment, in the third dimension, that it's extremely important, and that's where we get to a lot of the benefits. Here's some examples. The bottom one is what we call, red, which is retail or commercial. And suburban shopping center on the left is a lot of times has the same land use as a main street. Same thing with office. A suburban office park has the same land use as a downtown. Cities are divided into their component parts in generally new urban comprehensive plans, and I'll go into this a little bit more, as I know Steve will. There's real public involvement, and then the implementation is embedded in the plan. You set the stage in the comprehensive plan for coding. You address land use transportation connections, street design, and many other aspects of the functional plans and the sub-area plans that come after it. So now I'm going to switch gears and talk a little bit about a project that I've been working on for the last year, which is the city of Southgate. The city of Southgate is located in Los Angeles County. It's one of 88 cities in the county. It's a small city by standards in terms of area with 7.5 square miles, but the population is actually over 100,000 people. It's officially 105,000, but in reality, given the number of people who are living in each household, it's a kind of a jumping off point from immigrants from Mexico. It probably has a population of 120,000. So it's 100% urbanized. And as you can see in the picture, this is Southgate right here. It actually is touching 8 jurisdictions all on its border. And so the kind of the regional location and the relationship between, it's sort of seamless. You go right from one city to another and you actually don't even realize that you're passing into another city. The steps that we took in the process, it's been about a year process, which for a general plan in California is relatively fast. Sometimes they take 3 or 4 years. Sometimes, how long was Berkeley? 10 years? Something like that. So, which is ludicrous. But they, it's been relatively quick to get to where we are now. We did a pretty traditional, this is nothing too groundbreaking here, but we looked at existing conditions, we did a visioning, we created place types instead of land use designations, and I'll describe that. We applied the place types, and then we actually wrote the plan itself. So with the existing conditions, we did a couple things that were potentially a little bit different. First is we didn't do the traditional, as many communities do in California, hibernating. That's what I feel like doing right now. No? All right.
Who is our tech?
Do you want to do that? So with the existing conditions, let's see if I can do this. As you can see in my slide here, what we did was we moved beyond just doing a traditional existing conditions report, which usually is three or four inch thick documents that lists absolutely everything that you could possibly want to know about the community in very mundane and tiring language. And what we did was we actually we didn't just do that. We understood that information, but what we did was in issues and opportunities. One of the things that I think is lacking is really an analysis of the information and not just a regurgitation of it. We also identified component parts of the city. So these component parts of the city, we followed something that was pretty close to the neighborhood, district, and corridor from New Urbanism, where the neighborhoods are residential areas that have a unique identity or mixed-use areas, a mix of housing types. Districts are single-use or mixed-use areas. They have non-neighborhood design requirements, corridors. And then we came up with a term called a precinct, which is an area that has it has a single use, like an airport, where what you're concerned with is not what's internal to that and the design internally, but the external impacts of those areas. So this is what we ended up with, and this happened in the existing conditions process. We went through and identified each individual neighborhood, district, and corridor in the city. And one thing that we did was we didn't spend a lot of time specifically identifying which parcels at this point. Which parcels were in each neighborhood, district, and corridor, because what we wanted to do was we wanted to get the concepts across. And so we didn't spend a huge amount of time on this. We spent enough time to really know what the community was made up of and what the parts were. In our report, we did an analysis, a brief analysis of each of the different parts of the community, each neighborhood, district, and corridor, and then we applied a level of change to it. So we looked at each area, and we gave it one of three classifications. They are preserve and enhance, evolve and transform. And what the preserve and enhance is essentially keep it the same but add some tweaking around to kind of some improvements on the margin to make the area better. Evolve is over time the area will change from one use to another, or in 20 or 30 years or 50 years will be significantly different. And then transform is sort of the same idea, but it happens quickly and more with one stroke of the hand. And so what that does is, just sort of as a side note, what we found is that especially working in existing communities, there's always the fear of change in the communities. There's always the fear of, what are you going to do to my neighborhood? And when you actually start, when you put up the map and you say all of these areas are essentially maintaining what they are today with slight improvements, based on what you all tell us, then people are really comforted that the areas that we're really talking about, and this happens in existing urban areas, it's the corridors and the districts, where you're really talking about what changes. It's not as much in the neighborhoods. You may be creating new neighborhoods, but that doesn't have as much of an impact on the existing community. This is some work that Steve has done, and he'll probably show it, but looking at different patterns of land use and different patterns of design within a community. We then did a visioning process, and we tried to go through this again as quickly as possible, and we tried to get to what really the direction the city was going and the values of the community. And this was an interactive process where we tried to identify the vision of the community and the physical vision, and not just the kind of mom and apple pie language that you usually see. The vision statement that we did contains a vision, kind of the mom and apple pie vision, but also guiding principles. And the guiding principles actually get into this third dimension. So very quickly, we did a goal voting exercise. None of this is really groundbreaking stuff, but the way that we did it, it actually brought the community along in really a great process. And we actually just won an award for the public process that we did with this. We did a community image survey, and one of the things that I think was actually interesting for me is that the community didn't react negatively to density. Once we got beyond this, we're not going to increase the density in the existing residential areas, which was really their concern. They didn't react negatively to density. And if you see, there's two photographs on the bottom. It's essentially the same density, but they got very different scores because they were actually looking at the character and the feel that they wanted. So they liked one of them, but not the other. It was sort of an interesting result that we had. The next step was the creation of place types, and the place types are something that goes beyond just land use. They represent different types of places that can be built in the community and identify both the form and character of development. So they are, essentially, they replace in California the land use designation, which you have to say what is the use and the density, the population density for each area of the city. But they have that. They identify what the use is, but they also deal with more three-dimensional aspects, such as the building frontage and the placement, street connectivity, pedestrian access, parking vehicle access, and services. They take the place of land use designations. These are a few of the place types that we've come up with. Just as an example, we had something called single-use retail, which is sort of the traditional auto-oriented retail shopping center, and then we also had something called Main Street. And so the use was relatively close, but the way that the design of the buildings and the placement on the parcel and the access was very different for those. And so that through this process, we felt that we could differentiate different types of the community and different desired outcomes. The next step in the process was, once we had the place types, was the application of the place types to the neighborhoods, districts, and corridors. And what we did here is that the traditional regulatory geography of a general plan or a comprehensive plan is the parcel. And we took a step up from that, and we created neighborhoods, districts, and corridors, and those became the regulatory geography. So what we did was we applied the place types, which are more flexible, I think, than land use designations. We applied the place types to the neighborhoods, districts, and corridors themselves. And we did a lot of this. We did actually a week-long charrette for a general plan, and it was actually a very difficult process to try and do a charrette for an entire city in a week. We managed to do it because we kept the scale relatively high. That's a conversation in and of itself about how, if it's even possible to really do a charrette for that. But we did it, but what we did was we really focused on identifying the specific boundaries of each neighborhood, district, and corridor, and then doing the application of the place types. And we didn't get into a high level of design with this. So this is a map. This is very difficult to see. But these are the identified neighborhoods. We identified districts, and a lot of the districts, as you can see, have sub-areas. So if you see the blue here, the blue is one district, but there's three different sub-areas for what can happen, and you'll see how we kind of parse that out. And then the corridors in the city. So with the application of place types, what we really wanted to do was create something that balances flexibility, which I think you need as you're looking into the future. I mean, it is a vision plan. It's for 20 or 30 years in the future, and this, just a single land use on a parcel can actually become too constraining. It's very difficult to identify in areas that are changing what the market and environmental and the conditions are in the future, that the very specifics of that. But yet we also wanted to identify firm guidance. We wanted to give a direction so that those coming in to propose projects knew the desired end result of what we were trying to get to. And this is something that I think is different. Instead of applying one place type to a neighborhood, district, and corridor, we actually applied as many place types as we thought would be appropriate in that area. And I'll give an example. Is if you're thinking about a long arterial corridor through an existing urban environment, you might want mixed-use development, which ground floor retail and, you know, four or five stories of residential above that. But you also have to recognize that that there might be other uses that come in, such as a gas station, that might actually not have that exact character. And so in traditional planning, you would have to design it for, you'd have to call it mixed use, and you would sort of accept anything along a range of continuum down to, you know, from a gas station all the way up to the good mixed use building without any identification of what you'd really prefer. And so what we did was we created a tiered system of preferences from strongly desired, which is a green dot, and I'll show you this in a minute, to allowed, which is an orange dot, to discouraged, which is a red dot. And so we created, this is an example of just some of the districts. For each district and then sub-district, we went through, and you can see the green dots and the red dots and the orange dots. The X's means that it's not allowed there. For example, if you look at, I don't know if you can see this, the Tweedy Educational District, they mixed-use development is green, so it's preferred. and civic and institutional uses are preferred. And then single-use retail is allowed but not highly desired. So what this does is it gives the city the ability to come in. When a proposal comes in, they can say, well, the community really wants this. And so, yes, this is moving forward, or it's not as desired, and we really want you to do something else. But it gives them flexibility to change what they can do over time. We then created policy guidance for each of the districts and corridors and neighborhoods. They identified the existing conditions in the area, the vision for the future. So every one of those 22 districts and corridors, we wrote a vision statement for. We also identified the allowable place types, and we created policy guidance. So we're getting into that sub-area analysis and guidance. And then, of course, this is actually an example. This is the one of the districts. These are the four sub-areas, the vision statement, and then we go through each one of the areas and we show what can be done there. And then we created citywide policies on things like neighborhood preservation and regional coordination, you know, things that are important in all of these comprehensive plans. So it's not lacking, it's just that really the focus is on what happens for the vision for the neighborhoods, districts, and corridors. Some of the lessons learned in the process, one is you have to spend a lot of time looking at the community, of mapping and remapping the community. We went through and probably did 8 or 10 iterations of where the boundaries were between the different neighborhoods, districts, and corridors, and we didn't do all of that up front because we knew that it was going to change later on. We spent a lot of time understanding what the vision of the community was three-dimensionally. We identified place types that meet the community's needs. The neighborhoods, districts, and corridors, and one of the things that this is kind of leading into the implementation, they're going to do a form-based code after this, and so the neighborhoods, districts, and corridors become that regulatory geography that get translated into the code. And I think one of the problems when doing a form-based code is that the regulatory geography isn't correct, and so hopefully this is the way of beginning to solve some of that problem. And also we created flexibility in the plan, but we also identified desired outcomes. And I hope we were successful with this so far. It's still a little toddler, but it actually has been successful, and we have been able to see that proposals are coming in from to the city, and the city has said, no, this is a red. We don't want single-use retail here. What we want is mixed use. Go back and give us a mixed-use project. And so we've been able to actually do that. And that is all. I'd be happy to answer questions later on. Thank you.
Steve's going to take us up one level to a larger city in California. We're again trying to get these presentations in and have sufficient time for you to ask questions. Thank you.
Did it do it again? It's on. It's two dogs that I have. Okay, it looks like it's there. It's plugged in. Yeah, it's plugged in. What's in your computer? A year back now? And they like to hug.
Good morning. I'm going to cover similar ground, obviously, that Matt talked about, but the focus is going to be a little bit more on how urban form and community character can inform the comprehensive planning process and really move it from the more typical process of analysis of numbers and consideration of abstractions such as densities and population projections and traffic projections and all, to really a discussion of community character and what the community really wants to see as an end product. We are moving up in scale. City of Sacramento, as compared to 7 square miles, is roughly 100 square miles, population of close to 500,000 people. What's important about understanding the process that the city's currently going through. They're still in the midst of their general plan or comprehensive plan process, is that this comes on the heels of a regional planning process called the blueprint process that the six-county Sacramento region went through to look at how they could accommodate 1 million new people in the next 25 years, or actually next 20 years at this point.